Now remember, this is a letter from Daryl as an epistle to the First Baptist Church Simcoe. So it still will have Daryl's jokes in it. They're not mine. They're Daryl's. He still has them. They're still there. You've still grown or not, depending on what you prefer. Here we go. I have been convinced for a long time that the reason we enjoy humor, whether in jokes or stories, is because at the heart of every joke, there is a sliver of truth. Sometimes we joke about situations and experiences to hide the undercurrent of pain, struggle, and doubt we are truly experiencing, and probably do not want to confront. So I begin this morning by sharing with you some observations about marriage offered by well-known personalities. I ask you to try and read between the lines and beyond the humor. Bob Hope said, "We're happily married. We wake up in the middle of the night and laugh at each other." Groucho Marx says, Marriage is a wonderful institution, but who wants to live in an institution? Henny Youngman chimes in, "My wife and I were happy for 20 years. Then we met." There you go. That's it, getting it. He also said, "Do you know what it means to become home at night to a woman who gives you a little love, a little affection, a little tenderness? It means you're in the wrong house." An anonymous wrote, "There is something magical about the fact that success almost always comes faster to the guy your wife almost married." And woman to a marriage counselor, "The only thing my husband and I have in common is that we were married on the same day." Gene Carr. Do people know who Gene Carr is? No, don't know Gene Carr. Anyway. Wrote, "Marrying a man is like buying something you've been admiring for a long time in a shop window. You may love it when you get home, but it doesn't always go with everything else in the house." Zsa Zsa Gabor. Remember her? I don't know if I can do a Hungarian accent or not. She said, "A man in love..." No, I won't even try it. All right. "A man in love is incomplete until he is married. Then he is finished." A wise old man pointed out that it was impossible to judge the happiness of a married couple from observations alone. Do you hear these statements and quietly thank yourself? Oops, sorry, wrong line. Some couples hold hands because if they let go, they're afraid they will kill each other. There we go. We chuckle at these statements, but I ask the question again. Is there any truth hidden in these statements? Do you hear these statements and quietly think to yourself, "I hear you, brother or sister"? Marriage is the most intimate relationship human beings can have. And that being said, it also means marriage includes some real highs and some real deep lows and lots of stuff in between. Our spouses see us at the best, but more importantly also at the worst. Our little character flaws cannot be hidden from our spouses, but the rest of the world can remain oblivious to them. For example, no one but your spouse cares if you leave your dirty clothes on the floor. George R. Back recognized this intimacy in marriage when he wrote his bestseller, The Intimate Enemy. It is all about how to fight fair in a marriage with the person who knows you best. Daryl is very good at changing pages. I don't ever notice him doing it, but I won't be quite as good. At least I didn't drop it on the floor. When Peter began his third chapter talking about marriage, it raises us in us all kinds of issues. Some of what Peter writes seems so chauvinistic in these modern times. Like when he writes, "Your wife may be weaker than you are." He did, however, say, "She may not be," that is, she is weaker. So basically the point is, he still hedged his bet a little bit. However, if we get so caught up in what we perceive to be old-fashioned rhetoric from another culture, we fail to grasp Peter's main point. Peter is recognizing that marriage is, as I've already stated, the most intimate and most important of relationships. How your relationship goes with your spouse says a great deal about your level of faith and how seriously you take your relationship with God. This is particularly true when one spouse becomes a believer before the other spouse considers a life of faith. And we talked about in the scripture. Nothing can make marriage more challenging than when a Christian is united in marriage to a non-believer. It is the reason that Paul cautions against Christians marrying non-believers in 2 Corinthians 6, verses 14 and 15. The temptation Peter presents here is that the believing spouse begins to think of themselves as more superior than the unbelieving spouse. Such arrogance will only drive a wedge between the couple and also drive the unbelieving spouse further from God. Peter's advice is that the believing spouse should act with grace and not neglect the responsibilities to their spouse. The believing spouse is to focus on inner beauty. Faith in Christ is supposed to improve our relationships, not make them worse. I hope we can understand what Peter is saying here, because he takes it one critical step forward. And this leads us to the real genius of this passage. Did you notice how blunt the transition to verse 8 was? No. It seems rough to move from 7 to 8. The word "finally" that begins verse 8 is really better translated as "summing up." Peter has spoken about marriage as a template for relationships with good reason. Peter recognizes that the health of our marital relationship impacts all our relationships. If you cannot relate well to your spouse in the most intimate of relationships, how are you going to manage other less intimate ones? These humorous statements that I shared in the beginning reveal the fact that a poisonous life at home spills out into the rest of our life. If you are miserable with your spouse, you will be miserable to your kids, your coworkers, your friends, and even complete strangers. Psychologists call it transference. Our inner state of being in one situation or one relationship is transferred into other situations and other relationships. Peter knew this to be true, and we know it to be true as well. A man comes into the local coffee shop and snaps at the wait staff. Why? Is it because his latte has been slow in appearing, or he's miserable at home? A woman suddenly breaks down in her cubicle weeping uncontrollably. Is it her missed deadline at work, or because her husband was mean to her? You and I know that it's hard as we try to our lives. It just doesn't work 100% of the time. So Peter says, be of one mind. Here we go. Show sympathy. I'll try it again. And it didn't all fall on the floor. That's good. Show sympathy and kindness to one another. Don't repay evil for evil. Don't retaliate when people say unkind things about you. Instead, pay them back with a blessing. In other words, remember all of us have bad days, and no one except God himself knows what is taking place in the life of another person. The venom we experience from another person quite possibly may have nothing to do with us. We may just be a handy target at that moment. All of us have encountered people who are very angry about someone or something, and we know it's not about us. What do we normally say to them? Don't take it out on me, or don't shoot the messenger. As God's people, it behooves us to take the high road. Peace, kindness, gentleness, and love should be the hallmarks of our interactions with not only our families, but with all people. Peter is telling us that our spouses deserve our best, but so do other people we encounter. After all, Jesus gave us his best, even when he was having the ultimate in bad days. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they're doing. Peter is not suggesting, and I don't believe any rational person would, that we sweep our struggles under the rug. It is okay, actually. It is a healthy thing to acknowledge that we are imperfect beings, trying to relate to other imperfect beings. In all of us, there are hurts and struggles and disappointments and expectations that were never met. Our lives are not a fairy tale where we marry our prince or princess and live happily ever after, although my snow globe at home seems to indicate that, you know, princesses are wonderful. Maybe that is, he didn't have that in here. That was me. Maybe that is why people enjoy the movie Shrek, about a feisty ogre who falls for a beautiful princess named Fiona. Shrek is an ogre with a chip on his shoulder. He is well aware of his flaws and his gruesome appearance. There is no way the beautiful Fiona would ever love someone as imperfect and ugly as an ogre. That is, until true love reveals that Fiona is just as imperfect as Shrek. In fact, she is actually an ogre herself. She is at first devastated that her ogre appearance is her true appearance, until she learns that being mean and green actually helps Shrek to love her more. Christ calls us to defend and preserve our most intimate relationships because the spillover effect can cause so much harm. Love means accepting that all of us here have imperfections and are in need of God's saving grace. Love means realizing that true beauty, like with Fiona, comes from within. A famous comedian once said, "Married couples can live together day after day. It's a miracle that the Vatican has overlooked." Maybe this person was right, because Peter's point is that to be the people of God we want to be, God wants us to be, we need Christ's intervention and grace. Have you ever known a couple and thought to yourself, how in the world did they ever stay together for all these years? I'll let you in a little secret. While you are asking the question, they're asking the same one about you. Healthy relationships are a miracle. They are examples of grace. If we let him, God can change our hearts so that we can open our lives to someone else. So what we need, according to Peter, is not pity for one another, but rather understanding. Everyone is imperfect, and as such, we deal with each other in imperfect ways. Our relationships with others are a real jumble of tenderness and hostility. Every interaction we have with others is seen through their tinted glasses. Every time we deal with someone else, how they respond to us is created with a series of filters. Some of the factors that allow us to respond include cultural differences, miscommunication, our own personal history, both with that person and with similar situations. Our physical state at that moment, like I'm tired or I'm sick, and even the location that I'm in, if I'm at work or at home, that can make a huge difference. Am I saying that our relationships are complicated? Yes, I am. And we know they are. Otherwise, there would be no need for counselors or therapists, some of which specialize in relationships like marriage. Is there any wonder that many large corporations have human resource departments to navigate the intricate nature of workplace relationships? Peter is telling us that because relationships need to be navigated with great care, we need to refocus ourselves. Like Jesus, we need to lift the focus of our relationships off of ourselves and onto the other person. This is a really good story. There was once an old monastery that had fallen upon hard times. Centuries earlier, it had been a thriving monastery where many dedicated monks lived and worked and had great influence on the realm. But now only 5 monks remained, and they were all over 70 years old. It was clearly a dying order. A few miles away from the monastery lived an old hermit who many thought was a prophet. And one day the monks, agonizing over the impending demise of their order, they decided to visit the hermit to see if he might have some advice for them. Perhaps he would be able to see the future and show them what they could do to save the monastery. The hermit welcomed the 5 monks into his hut. But when they explained the purpose of their visit, the hermit could only sympathize with them. I will do my best hermit voice. Here we go. "Yes, I understand how it is," said the hermit. "The spirit has gone out of people. Hardly anyone cares for the old things anymore." "Is there anything you can tell us?" the abbot asked, "that would save the monastery?"
"No, I'm sorry," said the hermit. "I don't know how to save your monastery. The only thing that I can tell you is that one of you is an apostle of God."
The monks were both disappointed and confused by the hermit's cryptic statement. They returned to the monastery wondering what the hermit could have meant by the statement,
"One of you is an apostle of God."
For months after their visit, the monks pondered the significance of the hermit's words. "One of us is an apostle of God." Whoops. Did he actually mean one of us monks here at the monastery? That's impossible. We are all too old, too insignificant. On the other hand, what if it's true? And if it's true, then which one of us? Do you suppose he meant the abbot? Yes. If he meant anyone, it probably meant the abbot. He has been our leader for more than a generation. On the other hand, he might have meant Brother Thomas. Certainly, Brother Thomas is a holy man, a man of wisdom and light. He couldn't have meant Brother Elred. Elred gets crotchety at times and is difficult to reason with. On the other hand, he's almost always right. Maybe the hermit did mean Brother Elrod. But surely he could not have meant Brother Philip. Philip is so passive, so shy, a real nobody. Still, he's always there when you need him. He's loyal and trustworthy. Yes, he could have meant Philip. Of course, the hermit didn't mean me. He couldn't possibly have meant me. I'm just an ordinary person. Yet, suppose he did. As he contemplated in this manner, the old monks began to treat each other with extraordinary respect. On the off chance, one of them might actually be an apostle of God. And on the off chance that each monk himself might be the apostle spoken of by the hermit. And each monk began to treat himself with extraordinary respect. Because the monastery was situated in a beautiful forest, many people came there to picnic on its tiny lawn and walk its paths and every now and then go into the chapel and meditate and pray. And as they did so, without even being conscious of it, they sensed the aura of extraordinary respect that now began to surround the five old monks and seemed to radiate out of them, permeating the atmosphere of the place. There was something strangely attractive, even compelling about it. Hardly knowing why, people began to come back to the monastery more frequently to picnic, to play, and to pray. They began to bring their friends to show them this special place. And their friends brought friends. As more and more visitors came, some of the younger men started to talk with the old monks. And after a while, one asked if he could join them. Then another and another, and within a few years, the monastery had once again become a thriving order. And thanks to the hermit's gift, a vibrant center of light and spirituality through the realm. This is taken from Scott Peck's The Different Drum. As a church, we often discuss and wrestle with ways to attract more kids or young families. How do we grow numerically and spiritually? Perhaps, as Peter is suggesting, it really comes down to how we regard each other. Do we treat each other with extraordinary dignity and respect at home, at work, at church, or wherever we go? And I just want to kind of add with this that in my experience, there have been different places that I have worked at. And I have found that the atmosphere of the place that I have been in impacted my life significantly. That one of the places that I worked at, there were a number of people who were dealing with divorce. And they would come and they would share how much they hated their spouse or how much they just really didn't want to be in this relationship, and it just kind of spread through the whole place that I worked at. And it wasn't unusual to me to think that a few years after that, a few other people went through divorce within that staff because of all this negative attitude that had happened there. And one of the other places I worked at, every time that we had conversation, it was always positive and supportive, and they talked about their relationships with their husbands and their wives in very positive and uplifting things. And I was just like, it's so different with that attitude, and how work was so different between those two different places. And churches are the same way. That if we treat each other with respect and realize that we are all gifts of God, and that we're all very, very different. And I know that I am not Daryl. And this morning, I was very, very aware of that, that when I came out here, I was kind of going, oh, there's a lot of people, and there's no way I can go and shake everybody's hand and be sincerely welcoming as Daryl does. Now, I can get up and I can talk in front of a bunch of people, and that's what I do. But each one of you has the gifts that you have and can really make a difference. I'm going to key on Kathy's shot here a little bit. And this is Kathy over here. And I'm going to embarrass you a little bit, just a little. So I used to go in for coffee every morning to the Daily Grind, and Kathy worked there. And she would know people's names, and she would know what kind of coffee they were going to have. And you just walk in, you just feel wonderful walking into that coffee shop because Kathy was there. And my daughter Katie is now working at Tim Hortons. And there's a lady who's working there, and I think her name is Kate. And Katie was sharing with me how nice it is just to work at that place, because when people walk in the morning, she knows who they are, she knows what they want to order, and she's just so friendly towards the customers. And Katie, who was being trained, the same kind of thing. It's just a very different kind of experience. When I was dating a young woman in university, not Janet, we used to enjoy bickering with each other. And we would think of different ways to insult one another and say all kinds of things because we were, quote, witty. And we enjoyed the humor for quite a while. And then it got to be the point of, are any of these things that this person's saying true? It was just little things. And over time and over time and over time, it really started to get to me. And I thought, well, what is my response as a Christian supposed to be? How can I take that wit, that humor, and turn it into something positive? And from that day, if I ever think of something that I want to say to make it humorous, I will exaggerate it in a positive way instead of a negative way. And I found it has really changed my life as to how I deal with people. I still like to be witty. I'm not always very good at it, but I do try to be witty. And I would try to do it exaggerating in a positive way instead of a negative one. And I find it really makes a huge difference in my outlook in life, and hopefully the people around me outlooks on life as well. So I'd like to leave you with those thoughts, and from Daryl, and spouses, love each other. Love each other in whatever form that takes. And it's different for each one of us. And friends, love each other in whatever form that takes, whether it means keeping your mouth shut when you want to say something or saying something when you want to keep your mouth shut. Speaking the truth in love is a significant thing in our lives.